You're listening to Björk Unraveled, a series that demystifies Björk's music one piece at a time. I'm your host, Savannah Wright. When I first came up with the idea for Björk Unraveled, I saw it as a limited series. I plan to make my case to Björk skeptics, like my friend Carter, and conclude victoriously, which, if you listen to my first bonus episode, I did. But along the way, I discovered so much more than I could fit into one season, and I became friends with all of you listening now. I didn't want to let that go. So I started researching for season two. I wasn't sure what angle to take this time, until I talked to a listener named Sachi.
Hello, I am Sachi the Scorpio. I am a shamanic healer, an astrologist, and tarot card reader. And in a past life, I was a neuroscientist and molecular biologist.
She discovered Björk's music through her uncle, who put a few Björk tracks on a mix CD for her.
When I first was introduced to Björk by him, I didn't necessarily resonate with it fully. I was still open to it. I liked it because, like, you know, my cool uncle, the one that likes to party, you know, like, I didn't necessarily resonate with it until I was, like, my late teens, I want to say.
But once it resonated, she became enamored with Björk's music. Sachi reached out because she wanted to talk about the cross-section of her two obsessions, Björk and astrology. Now, I live in LA. Astrology is a big deal here. If you've ever seen the Overheard LA posts, you know a lot of Angelinos make decisions based on the heavens. I'm not one of them. But Sachi made a strong case, and a few weeks later, I realized how useful this way of looking at Björk's music was. Not astrology specifically, but looking at her music through a unique lens. This one was Björk plus astrology, and I started thinking about how many other combinations I could examine. Björk plus feminism, Björk plus fashion, Björk plus Michel Gondry. I could look at the intersection between her history and that topic, and then connect it to a specific song or album. And thus the structure of season two was born. I call it, and I know this is cheesy because of all those new streaming services, Björk Plus. I'm not changing the podcast name or anything. Instead, think of it more like a theme or a guiding principle. So in this episode, we'll examine the cross-section of Björk and astrology. I'll talk to Sachi about how Björk's birth chart informs her music, specifically in the song Pluto, but also throughout her discography. Now, before we can dive in, I want to assuage any misgivings you might have about this topic. I'm not trying to persuade you to follow astrology, but I do want you to have an open mind about how it can enrich our understanding of Björk's music. Astrology is a lot more complicated than just knowing your sun sign. Sachi has a background in neuroscience, so she approaches it much more scientifically.
I kind of went in and just started noticing patterns. If someone has a moon in Capricorn, how do they behave with me? How do they emote? What are their emotional needs? So I started just collecting data of, you know, people that I knew, myself, famous people, trying to understand my own algorithm with it. And that's what I found, is that the solar system, as we hurl through space, you know, our cluster of planets together with our sun as our energy source, the way that the planets dance is an algorithm. And once I understood it as a pattern, there was really no turning back for me. Because as I started testing over and over again, my hypotheses, I should say, it was really a tried and true method that never led me astray.
Okay, spoiler alert, I still don't follow astrology, and neither does Björk. In 1995, she told Interview Magazine, quote, "My mom is heavily into these things, and apparently I'm as much Scorpio as one can be. To me, whether it means something or not, F that. I just love the symbolism of it. It's pretty, like Greek and Nordic mythologies. I'm supposed to be run by Pluto. It's like a fairy tale. It simplifies things." Close quote. But whether you follow it or not, astrology is one of many lenses that we can use to better understand Björk and her music. Here's Sachi again.
once I started getting a little bit deeper into her music, I was like, I bet she's a Scorpio, you know, being a Scorpio myself. And then she turned out to be a triple Scorpio. And I was like, whoa, yeah, it's, I can tell because she's so intense.
Okay, yeah, I want to unpack that triple Scorpio, but first I have to ask the question, when you say she feels like a Scorpio, what do you mean? Because I think that's where some people kind of like disconnect from astrology. It's like, how do you feel that?
So Scorpio typically has a presence that you feel, just period, point blank. There's a certain magnetism to them. I mean, they're like a magnet. So either you're pulled close or you're extremely repelled. Scorpios are intense. That's what they embody, is the intensity. And the most intense experiences in life are scorpionic, which are death and rebirth and alchemy, some of the, you know, qualities of life that people don't really want to acknowledge.
Yeah, when you describe her as a magnet where she either really attracted or you repelled, I feel like that is pretty emblematic of the way people react to her music. It's like, you know, she has these really devoted followers and fans who are like, yes, I love this. And they like obsess over it. And that's like you and me. Mm-hmm. And then there are people who hear it and they're like, nah, I'm good. Like, this is too weird.
Yeah, exactly.
But something that you said, so she's a triple Scorpio. Can you explain that to someone like me who doesn't really know much about astrology beyond like kind of the silliness you see in the newspaper?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So Bjork is a triple Scorpio, and Scorpio is the shaman of the zodiac. So they are able to transmute one form of energy into another, which I would say that Bjork does with, you know, her pain, her joy, her sadness. You can feel that in her music, how she's taken her emotion and put it into something tangible through sound waves. So this alchemical process of transformation is through death and rebirth, which Scorpio rules, which Pluto also rules. Scorpio and Pluto are synonymous. So Pluto is the ruling planet of Scorpio. Scorpio is the constellation. So she is a sun, moon, and rising. So that's what it means to be a triple Scorpio. It's called your big three, which is your sun, the core of who you are, your moon, which is your emotional world, your emotional needs, and your rising sign, which is your ascension point, essentially, on your chart. So your sun would be what you would typically like read your horoscope as. So most people know what their sun sign is. That's like your zodiac sign. So that indicates where, what constellation the sun was in when you were born. So if you're born during Aries season, which is what we're in now, babies being born right now are Aries. But today the moon is in Taurus, so they would have a Taurus moon. So your moon sign is what constellation the moon is when you were born. And your ascension point basically shows the time of day that it is. The ascension point is, it's not an actual planetary position or object. It's a calculation that changes every single minute, actually. That's why it's so important to know your exact time of birth to see a full chart.
Okay. And so that's why, like, people who are born in the same month, they don't all just have like the same personality, which is like a misconception of astrology. It really depends on like the exact moment of your birth.
Yeah, exactly. We are very complex individuals. And again, it's a very complex code. Your natal chart is a snapshot of the entire solar system when you are born. So it takes into consideration all of the planets and how they interact with each other, that forms your personality and also shows you a map of how the world interacts with your energy. So her being a triple Scorpio means that her sun, her moon, and her rising are all Scorpio. And actually, she's a quadruple Scorpio. She has Neptune, a fourth planet in the first house as a Scorpio. So she has four placements in Scorpio, but Neptune is a very far away planet. So it indicates like the subtler realms of emotions, as well as other dimensions, unseen forces, illusions, dreams, which I think she, you know, kind of embodies that as well, because the first house is also associated with your rising sign. It sets your first house.
And so you mentioned that Scorpio and Pluto are pretty much synonymous, especially with Bjork being a quadruple Scorpio. I'm curious how We know that one of her songs is called Pluto. And how can understanding astrology help us better understand that song?
Mm-hmm. So as I mentioned that, Scorpio is the shaman and rules death and rebirth. So, Scorpio goes through a process of death and rebirth throughout their life. So to simplify, Scorpio is born as a scorpion, which has like jealous and obsessive traits. It's the unevolved aspect of Scorpio. And then Scorpio dies and is born as the eagle, which is when Scorpio learns discernment and has that eagle eye, that investigative quality, can sniff out lies and things like that. I mean, people always say don't lie to a Scorpio, and that's why. If they're an eagle, they'll know. And then they are born again as the phoenix, which is the final stage of a Scorpio. And that is when you reach that shamanic stage. And the phoenix, of course, is destined or doomed, however you want to put it, to constantly die and be reborn again as the phoenix, which I'm sure everyone listening here would agree that Bjork is the most advanced type of Scorpio that there is, that she is a phoenix. You know, she has died and reborn so many times, from debut, which, is fun, sexy, playful. And, now to Utopia, which is like her calling to the divine feminine to rise, to form a matriarchal dome in our society. There's a big, big difference. And, even all of her songs kind of show that difference. And I feel like the genre bending that you really hit on in that one episode, I think that's why she defies genres, is because literally every single song is like a small death and rebirth. But yeah, so the song Pluto. I mean, Pluto is a pretty disharmonious song, if I may say. I'm a fan of it, but there's a lot of yelling and, jarring sounds, and you're almost being jerked around. And it literally is an embodiment of what Pluto signifies as the planet of death and rebirth. I mean, she says, and they're very, very simple lyrics as well, right? She says, excuse me. So Scorpios, as intense as they are, they're a fixed water sign. So their emotional world is what it is. As water, it can be likened to ice, right? Solid water, fixed water. So you can't really change the mind of a Scorpio, but they're also the most private of the signs as well. So it feels like she's excusing herself from it, because she does, like, Scorpios don't like to explode around other people. They will take themselves away from a situation because they see like an emotional reaction to where they would explode as a moment of weakness. They really like to have emotional control over themselves. So, she says, excuse me. And, I have to explode this body off me. That is literally the phoenix. It's through the whole alchemical process of Scorpio being, dying and being reborn as the scorpion, then the eagle, then the phoenix. But she's literally describing what Pluto and Scorpio represent, which is the shamanic death of exploding the body off of you and being reborn again. She goes on to say that she'll be brand new, like, I'll be brand new. That's the rebirth, and brand new tomorrow, which is such a fast time to be like, yeah, just excuse me, I'll be new tomorrow. And that's how Scorpios can be sometimes with their intensity, where they will literally explode themselves. And a Scorpio one day might not be the Scorpio that you know the next day if they've undergone a death and rebirth. And it seems like she's going through them very, very quickly. You know, she talks about being a little bit tired, but brand new. And I think that really captures what Scorpio is. Like, it is exhausting to die, you know, but the rebirth, is it worth it? It is worth to be brand new. And, you know, it still feels like she's kind of like, yeah, like, I'll be fine, right? Like, I'm going to die, but, you know, I'll be brand new tomorrow. I'm good. So it's still showing a little bit of some underdeveloped Scorpio qualities, because it really isn't until Volnakura where she like truly expresses her pain of like real death and rebirth.
No, I think that is probably like, yeah, the most poignant record like shift that you can point to is Volnakura and then Utopia, because she even describes it that way herself, where she described Volnakura as like being at the bottom of a lake and then Utopia is rising to the surface. It's really interesting to notice those patterns. And she even commented on how astrology influenced the lyrics of this song. She said, "I've got Pluto in a very important place, and that's what I'm about. I have to recreate the universe every morning when I wake up and kill it in the evening," which is a bit outrageous, but there you go.
Yeah, I mean, we know from some interviews that she knows her chart, and she talks about it as if she, you know, is aware of how astrology has impacted her, how she is able to transform things. And she even talks about knowing about her own Pluto, which is in Virgo, which has to do with service to others and daily habits and health. And it's interesting to note that her Pluto, so where Pluto was when she was born, is in Virgo, as I mentioned, and it's 1 degree away from her midheaven. And your midheaven in your natal chart is basically a door where you can learn how to take the spiritual, the mental, the emotional, and bring it into the physical world. It's like a little manifestation door. So it's very interesting how close they are, because when that's happening in a natal chart, like the ability to bring something from intangible to tangible is incredible. And the fact that she knows how to use, you know, her midheaven with her Pluto right there really does show that she is just a transmutation machine. Basically.
Okay, let's recap what we've learned so far. 1, Bjork's mother was into astrology, and so Bjork is at least aware of her birth chart and its significance. 2, the lyrics of the song Pluto are basically about what it's like being a triple Scorpio, where everything is about death and rebirth. And 3, we see that cycle of death and rebirth not only in this song, but also in other parts of Bjork's discography, like the shift from Volnakura to Utopia. But there's one other death and rebirth pattern that Sachi brought up. It has to do with the album Pluto is on, Homogenic.
I thought it was significant where Pluto is placed in the album. So, you know, on Homogenic, right before, right, we have 5 years and Immature, which are, you know, her kind of like, oh, we're broken up, like, see, where you'll miss me, you know, you're not gonna have love in 5 years. And you're the one who's missing out, but you won't notice until after 5 years. If you live that long, you'll wake up, oh, loveless. Then Immature, which is like, how could I expect someone to complete me? Kind of like disgusted with herself a little bit, like, you know, I have to find the missing pieces of me, not through a relationship. So it feels like, you know, she's getting over this heartbreak, but still kind of placing the blame on like somebody else in a way. And then we go to Alarm Call, which is all about, you know, again, she's like, yeah, I can like people, you know, I feel good about it. You know, she talks about hitting enlightenment, which is Scorpios can get certain, I guess you would say, downloads about, you know, what needs to change, how to change and things like that. So we go from Alarm Call, which is pretty, you know, upbeat, like beep, 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 you know, and yeah, Alarm Call is like a testament to say, you know, hey, wake up, you know, something needs to change here. And then we go to Pluto. Which is just this jarring soundscape. And, you know, it's a testament of death and rebirth, which is also part of, you know, nature, which I think most people kind of don't want to acknowledge that it's a natural part of the natural world, which Bjork like bases most of her music on. So yeah, we go to Pluto, which is, you know, just this explosive song. And then we go to All Is Full of Love. So it seems like, you know, she went through some sort of heartbreak. She's kind of like, you know, you'll miss me. And how could I be immature to think that he would complete me? And then, you know, we have this moment of enlightenment and then Pluto, which is kind of the integration of the knowledge as she, you know, allows that person who was in that relationship to die. And then she is reborn as a new person. And then she understands, you know what, all still is full of love. Like, I'm not missing any love, neither is that person. You know, it feels like an angelic testament of actual love, you know, of understanding, you know, the whole universe is just a manifestation of love anyway. And, you know, not always where you pour it in is where you will receive it. All the songs compared to All Is Full of Love is so different. It's just a real juxtaposition. When I found out that it was on Homogenic, I was surprised.
Yeah.
Honestly, because I listened mostly, you know, not like the albums all the way through. I just had like bits and pieces from, you know, CDs that my uncle would burn me. So when I found out I was on Homogenic, it really didn't feel like it fit until I figured out that Pluto was the song right before it. So it feels like she is finally rebirthing, you know, in that All Is Full of Love and really starting to understand, you know, the deeper implications of what love entails.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up because it does feel like a very jarring and unexpected ending. Well, I mean, there is like a lot of buildup, like you just laid out for us. And you get to Pluto and you're like, okay, this feels like the climax. But then there is that one song after and you're like, oh, okay, this is like suggesting something different. And of course, we know that Vespertine would come later and have that kind of angelic gentleness that we get a glimpse of there. Yeah, that's cool to notice that pattern in micro. Like, we showed it with albums, you know, but this is just within one album.
Mm-hmm. We could say this is her Pluto placement of where she really transformed from just like, hey, I'm out here to have a good time and, oh, you know, getting in another codependent relationship or whatever it may be, to when she starts really understanding the deeper nature of love. And, you know, then we go on to Vonnegut, Heartbreak, and Utopia, the biggest rebirth yet, right?
So right, yeah.
There's always subtle patterns in the chaos. And I think That's what I love about astrology too, is because, you know, it looks just like a chaotic circle with a bunch of lines everywhere. But if you can understand what it means, it really paints a beautiful picture and map of who we are, of what the world is, of who Bjork is, and how she really has been manifesting the best life for herself. you know, as a triple Scorpio, continuing to rise.
Yeah. Yeah. She's not, it's just like going to keep going. Huh? There's no like apex. That's what's cool about it, is it's cyclical.
I don't think we'll ever know the final version of Bjork. She will keep rebirthing and surprising us. And I think that's what I love about her music so much. Every song, every album is always something new.
A huge thank you to Sachi for coming on the show. You can follow her on Instagram at Sachi the Scorpio. I hope you've enjoyed this lens of understanding Bjork's work. Again, it's just one of many I'm using for this Bjork Plus theme, but I'm really excited about all of the other topics we're going to explore. Now, I'm a one-woman show here, and I want to make sure I have enough material banked so that I can release consistently every other week. So I'm signing off for another short break, but you can expect more episodes when season 2 officially drops in July. Stay tuned. You've been listening to Bjork Unraveled, a series that demystifies Bjork's music one piece at a time. Bjork Unraveled is produced independently by me, Savannah Wright. If you liked this episode, please share it with a friend and submit a review on whatever podcast app you're using. It helps more people discover the show. If you have an idea for a future episode, tell me about it. You can find me on Instagram at Bjork Unraveled. I'm Savannah Wright. Thanks for listening.